Take your Bibles, if you will, to Ecclesiastes chapter 7. We're going to begin reading right in verse 1 and read down through verse 6. Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 1. A good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death better, than the one of one's birth. It is better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men, and the living will lay it to his heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by the sadness of the countenance the heart is made better. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of the fools is in the house of mirth. It is better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. For as the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fool. This also is vanity. If you remember last week, I told you that I was going to preach just that first phrase of chapter 7, verse 1, talking about a better name is better, a good name is better than precious ointment. And I promised this week to put it together with the rest of the passage and to try to fit it all into context to help you to better understand. I wanted to take last week and just remind us how important our testimony is. But if we're going to look and see what the context of chapter 7, verse paragraph or 2, I think we've got to go all the way back to chapter 6, verse 12. Will you look at that with me? It says, "For who knoweth what is good for a man in this life, all the days of his vain life, which he spendeth as a shadow? For who can tell a man what shall be after him under the sun?" All through chapter 7, Solomon is going to try to help us to really answer that question, what is good for a man? What is wisdom good for in this life? He's going to use that word wisdom several times right in this chapter. And what he is saying is he is slowly starting to get his gaze above the sun. He still ends here with all his vanity and everything is still, he hasn't gotten there yet, but he's saying that there is some good to wisdom in this world. And he's going to give us some interesting thoughts on what he considers to be wisdom, and hopefully we'll be able to apply that to our lives tonight. As a matter of fact, through this couple of verses, Solomon is taking some space here to tell us what is going to be helpful. But listen, it's interesting to me, not just in life that you're living day to day, although there's practical application for that, he is really starting to uncover what is good for you spiritually. What is good for your spiritual lives? And so he uses this word better over and over again, trying to help us to see that which ought to grab our attention, what we ought to be striving for. And so he starts off with a good name is better than precious ointment. Now, like I said, we spent all last week looking at this small, just this few couple of words. I don't want to spend much time on it, but I do want to bring it into context here. You understand, it talks really about the brevity of the perfume or that ointment. Several years ago, my wife had found some kind of discount cologne on Amazon and smelled good. I liked it, and I could take a bath in that thing, and you wouldn't smell it by the time I got to the front door, okay? And it was so watered down, I think, that's why it was such a good price there. So when you buy something on Amazon, I used to say you get what you pay for. That's not even true anymore, okay? But anything, even the most exquisite and the most expensive perfume or cologne that you put on is going to evaporate. It's going to go away. And while it might smell great for a while, what's going to happen after it's gone? And that's really what Solomon is starting. That's why he starts off, listen, a good name is better than some ointment. Why is that? Well, he's going to give us several reasons, but one of the reasons is once you die, your mark is cemented. You have cemented your mark or your impact on this world. There's nothing more you can do after you pass with your testimony. While you're alive, it ought to be a great fragrant to God, but once you're gone, it's better than just some temporary thing because that is a permanent reminder of who you are. When people go to your funeral, They will remember whatever those most poignant things are about you. When your family gathers together at the reception or the night before the funeral, as people are talking about you and reminiscing about you, there'll be some things that bubble to the top, and maybe it's your eccentricities. I don't know. Maybe it's your sense of humor, whatever it may be. But your testimony and hopefully your love for God are going to be some of those things that will be something that is like glue to your family, something that they'll say, yes, you know, my mom, she loved the Lord. My dad, he lived for the Lord. And I'm not talking about just vocationally. I'm talking about just a heart's passion of wanting to walk with God. And so Solomon here, he's really saying, listen, it is better to have that testimony that is not going to be scandalous. It's good and it's solid, and people are going to remember you because of your walk with God. Now, he doesn't say walk with God, but it's kind of this idea that once you're dead, your testimony is cemented. You can't change that after you're gone. I read of a football player today. He's one of the most popular players in New York Giants history. His name was Cal Rote Sr. And he died suddenly, I don't know if it was during surgery or right after surgery, back in 2002 at the age of 73. He was an All-American where he went to college. He was the first number one pick in the 1951 NFL draft and was later the first president of the NFL Players Association. His son, Kyle Rote Jr., made this remark. I don't know if it was at his funeral, at a memorial, but he said, I think what made his career so remarkable wasn't so much being the number one pick in the NFL draft or being captain of the Giants 10 of the 11 years that he played there or going to the Pro Bowl 3 or 4 times or becoming a great receiver after being hurt and coming back from so many knee injuries. His son said this, to me, the most remarkable thing about him from football standpoint was that he had 14 teammates who named sons after him. He had an impact. He had a testimony that was going to outlive him. Now, I'm not saying that you have to have somebody named after you, but I do want to ask you this question. What kind of impact are you making on those people around you? That good name is better than all the riches in the world. Because all those are fleeting. All those are temporary. Just like the aroma of an ointment. It's here for a moment, but then it's gone. But you're building a testimony that is going to outlive you. Are you going to have an impact on the world around you? But that verse doesn't end there. It continues. It says, not only is a good name better than precious ointment, it says, and the day of death than the day of one's birth. Now, I think it's obvious you can't have one without the other. You can't have a death day until you have a birthday. But why is that better? Why is the day of your death better? Well, I can think of a couple of reasons. I want to share just two of them with you very quickly. The first one is when you take that entire verse as a single unit, you get the idea that your testimony is cemented at the day of your death. As I said, you can't harm it. You can't undo it. But this is only true if you have started with a good name. Solomon would word it slightly differently in Proverbs. Proverbs 10, verse 7 says, the memory of the just is blessed, but the name of the wicked shall rot. Think of a few people in the Bible. Mary of Bethany anointed the Lord's feet with her expensive perfume and his fragrance, filled the house. What did the Lord tell her? Whenever this is preached, you'll be remembered because of what she had done, the impact that she had, and her act of faith. But if I were to pick someone else, someone that said they walked with the Lord, traveled with him for those 3 years, I just would ask you this way. How many people do you know named their child Judas today? Not Judah. That has a completely different meaning, okay? It means praise. But Judas, no one names their son after Judas. Why? Because of the horrible, awful testimony that he left behind. Nobody wants to be associated with that. So death cements our mark on this world. When we get to verse 2, we see that death causes us to contemplate our own mortality. Death causes us to contemplate our own mortality. Look at verse 2. It is better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men, and the living will lay it to his heart. Solomon is daring us to look at death in the face, contemplate it, learn from it. Now, let me be very clear. He did not say that we should be preoccupied with it. There is an unhealthy fascination with death. I think that is becoming more prevalent in young people, I don't know about than ever, but there is this macabre undercurrent or subculture in our culture today that is just absolutely fascinated with death. That's not what Solomon is talking about here. But he is saying that it's better to go to a funeral than it is a party. Okay? And we're going to talk about why that is in just a second. You see, people know that they're going to die, but they don't want to think about it. They want to just push it out of their minds. You know it's inevitable, but as long as they don't have to think about it, then they don't have to deal with it. Let me just give you an aside. It's not found in the book of Ecclesiastes, but it is part of wisdom literature, all right? Christian, you ought to be prepared for death like no one else. Not just your physical death, but your financial affairs. Christians ought to be prepared. We shouldn't have our head in the sand. You should have a will. Your family should know what your desires are as far as end-of-life care and all those things. And just because it's unpleasant to think about sometimes doesn't mean that we can just think it's never going to happen to us. Now, listen, I'm praying the Lord's going to come. I want to go up into the clouds. But I want my family to understand and not be confused and to be left out in the dark as to what my final wishes are. And so we have a will. And I think it is wise and prudent for Christians. Listen, the rest of the world, they're not ready for physical death in the afterlife. Christians are at least that far ahead. But we ought to be an example, and we ought to provide things for our family that is going to make our passing less painful, if I could put it that way. All right, that was free. Solomon didn't say anything about that, but I thought it would be a help to you tonight, all right? But he's saying here, even though people don't want to contemplate death, that it's better to go to a funeral than to a party. It's hard to believe that he's serious here, right? How is it better to go to a house of mourning than to a place where they're feasting? Do you really believe that? I mean, apart from being a pastor, and sometimes when you have family, you feel obligated. But most people don't just line up at the funeral home to attend people's funerals because it sounds like a good time. It's like, do I want cake or a coffin? No one chooses to go unless it's a loved one. You're saying goodbye. So how could the writer of Scripture tell us that it's better then to go to the funeral, the house of mourning, than it is to the house of feasting or where the party is taking place? Well, when we read the rest of the verse, we get a better understanding why it's better to go to the funeral. Look at the rest of verse 2. It says, it's better to go to the house of mourning to the house than to go to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men, and the living will lay it to its heart. Do you know why? Because it causes us to think and contemplate our own eternality, our own mortality. You see, he starts off saying, once you pass from this world, your mark is cemented. It's not going to change. And he's trying to start getting us to think past this physical life into what the next life has. And so he starts talking about this idea of going to the funeral because it causes people to think about the inevitable. Now, I don't know if you've ever thought about it this way, but when you go to a funeral, you're getting a preview of what's going to happen to your body one day. Now, the cause of death, the time, the place, it'll most probably be different. But the conclusion is going to be the same. There's going to be a day that they close and lock and seal that body inside the coffin that used to belong to you. You won't be there. Don't panic. But your body will be seen for the last time by human eyes. And one day, people will be remembering your life. They will be saying their goodbyes. But it's going to be to you. And as much as we want to avoid the subject, as much as our culture wants to even avoid the idea, death is our conclusion. Unless the Lord returns before we take our last breath, it's unavoidable. One out of one people that are born die. It has to be faced. And so that is why the house of mourning is better. It's why going to a funeral helps us to contemplate where we are in our relationship to an almighty God. Remember, everything that Solomon is writing here is really meant to be read, and it's all pointing there towards chapter 11 and 12. You see, when you go to a memorial service, after the funeral, there's sometimes a dinner or a get-together. If you're part of that, you should go with consolations. You should be able to console those that have lost a dear part of their life, a loved one. But we ought to also be considering that loss in our own lives. Not just of that person that we loved, but what's going to happen to us one day. And so funerals, I've preached just a handful of weddings, and I've preached several. When we merged with Davidson Memorial, I felt like every other week I was doing a funeral from somebody that was related to somebody in the church. And I can tell you this, the biggest difference between doing a wedding and doing a funeral is how well people listen. When I preach a funeral, people are they're plugged in. They want to know, what does the preacher have to say? What words of comfort? What where am I going to go one day when I die? Now at a wedding, everybody's just waiting for, you can kiss the bride, you know, and everybody, that's what they're waiting for, and they're just waiting for the preacher to get done. That's how it feels like sometimes. But there is something about a funeral that causes people to contemplate their own mortality. And what Solomon is saying is, that's a better thing because it's going to help you in your walk with God. But it's more than just considering my mortality. Look at verse 4. It says, the heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. I think Solomon knows that people are going to say, that's ridiculous. Why would anybody want to go to a funeral instead of a party? And he's saying, if you're choosing the party over the funeral, you're a fool because you are putting the temporal in front of the eternal. He says, wise people are going to be at the funeral rather than at the feast. Why is that? Well, it helps us to take account of the time that we have left. Moses gives the same admonition in Psalm 90, verse 12. It says, so teach us to number our days that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom. Now, this is contemplating our mortality in a healthy way. It's not a wrong or fixated view on death, but it's a good reminder. We only have so many days. On my phone, I have an app. I might have shared it with you before. It's got a countdown. I think I've got 11,398 days left until the countdown's no good. Oh, I lost 4 days, 394. You say, what is that? Well, I just took a person born at my age, what the amortization table says from the insurance company, and if I were to live a natural life, that's how many days I have left. I think it's 82 and a half. For somebody born in 1973. Now, the Lord could take me much before that. I understand that. But every time I see that timer, I think, you know what? I need to redeem the time. It's a reminder to me of that I only have so many days left. You see, unfortunately, we treat time like it is an endless commodity. And we live today the same as we lived yesterday, and we expect tomorrow to be the same. And I think we can be kind of foolish when we think that time is an endless commodity. It's not. It's the most valuable commodity that God has given to us. And He wants us to use it. In Ephesians, it talks about redeeming the time. But if we just barrel into tomorrow or at the end of this day, thinking that tomorrow and the tomorrow after that and the tomorrow after that is endless, we really, I think, do God an injustice. We don't consider Him being sovereign. He writes, boast not thyself of tomorrow, for thou knowest not what a day may bring forth. And so when we number our days, it makes us wiser because it reminds us that we're not going to live forever. And so we ought to live daily in the days that we have with this thought, I am not going to live this life forever. You know what that means? That means you should do some hard things now. You should rectify some relationships now. You don't know how long you have. And rather than going around and being detached from people that You love, you're going to be reconciled. You say, I'll get to it. I'll wait for them to come talk. No. Listen, do the hard things now. If I've got a friend or a coworker or a family member that needs to hear the gospel, and I'm just waiting for the right. Now listen, I do believe that God opens windows and doors of opportunity. And you've got to pray for those. But if you've been praying for 20 years and the Lord hasn't given you an opportunity, it doesn't mean he hasn't given you one. It means you haven't taken one. And maybe it's just time to call him up and say, hey, listen, I've been really burdened about you. Can we talk? Do the hard things now. We don't have an endless supply of days. And it may feel that way, young person, when you're in your 20s. Listen, 50 seems old. Now that I'm 50, listen, 90 doesn't even seem that old anymore. And ask Doc, Doc, what's old? No, I'm not going to ask him what old is for him now, okay? But I'm just saying, the older you get, the more you realize time is a valuable commodity. Redeem the time. Make use of it. Psalm 39:4 reminds us, Lord, make me to know mine end and the measure of my days, what it is, that I may know how frail I am. Two verses later, the same psalmist in the same psalm, verse 6 says, surely every man walketh in vain, Surely they are disquieted in vain. He heapeth up riches and knoweth not who shall gather them. It sounds a lot like what Solomon has been saying all along. This life is full of vanities. It is empty and futile. Jesus tells a parable about somebody that thought that he had endless amount of days. It's in chapter 12, verse 16. I'm going to read you the entire story. I think it's worthwhile. Starting in verse 16 of Luke 12, it says, and he spake a parable unto them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man brought up forth plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do? Because I have no room where to bestow my fruits. And he said, this will I do. I will put down my barns and build greater, and there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said unto him, thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then whose shall those things be which thou hast provided? Do you sense a common theme? Do you understand that all of us are tempted to live like we have always lived and to spend our days if we are guaranteed day after day after day, but we aren't? Job said, in the midst of his trial, my days are swifter than a weaver's shuttle and are spent without hope. To just simply accumulate and get and retire, I don't see that in the Bible anywhere. Don't put off important things. Don't live as if time were an unlimited resource. It's not. But I think at the same time, I'm going to give you a contradictory statement. Knowing that our time is limited, while it should keep us from wasting our days away and to make use of them, I think it also reminds us that we're living for another life. While this life will end, we have a life that will never end. It's critical for us to accept that the lives we live are limited. We're going to expire. This body will. But we have a soul that's going to live forever. And so, one of the ways we can make sure that we're not wasting this life, one of the things that we can do to make the most and to maximize the life that God has given to us, when I talk about redeeming the time, it's not just doing the hard things, it's doing the right things. It's walking with God and remembering that we are living for a time and a place that is beyond what we can see here. This entire book, we're now more than halfway through it, but it's all pointing towards chapter 11 and 12, but especially in chapter 12, verses 13 and 14, it says, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. So Solomon is saying, listen, you need to number your days. Why? Because it makes us wiser, according to Moses, by reminding us that we're not going to live forever. And so we shouldn't live like we're going to live in this life forever. But this then is informed by the truth that numbering our days makes us wise, because it tells us that once this life is over, we are going to stand before God in judgment on how we have lived the life He has given to us. It's really two sides of the same coin, isn't it? It's our life, and it's our eternal life. This body, it'll expire, it'll go away. But the choices that we make in this life, they are going to affect the life that we have after this one. Solomon's saying it's better to go to the funeral, because it puts things in perspective. It helps us to see that what we live for ought to be for the eternal and not for the temporal. He says it's better because it makes us wise. And when you're sitting there at the funeral and you're contemplating your own mortality and you realize that one day that your mark is going to be cemented and there is no changing it, there's time now. You see, then it's going to be too late. But it's not too late right now. And you can make choices today that will help your impact to be felt after God takes you out of this world. And make a decision tomorrow and the day after that. Solomon is just reminding us of the importance of recognizing our limited time here and the time that we'll have with God for all eternity. Are you living a life worth living? Don't wait until it's too late.